arrives in at the weekend, and it goes like this, tubs@rte.ie. I am Morning Ryan. I'm the eldest of four children, and I am the only girl. My three brothers still live at home with my parents. I'm 37, married with three young children, and don't get much support from my family. However, I'm very concerned about my younger brother. He was always a lovely, bubbly child and had some learning difficulty in school, which then led him to be put into a special class. He left school when he was 18 and has done nothing ever since. He's 24 now. He's no friends, and he doesn't go outside the door. And to me, it seems that it suits my parents, as they have control over everything to do with him. And when I call to my parents' house, he sits on the chair in the kitchen and rocks back and forward. And when he talks, he goes on a rant about whatever movie he had watched the night before. From what my parents told me, he goes to the toilet the same time every day, gets up out of bed and goes to bed the same time every day, and is constantly washing his hands. I asked my mother, was he ever assessed? She said that he has some form of autism. He is not encouraged to do anything. I have tried to talk to him and he says nothing. I've tried to talk to my parents and they just fob it off. My major concern is, when my mother and father do pass on, what is going to become of him? He's getting worse. He's like an old man trapped in a young person's body, and he's being institutionalized in his own home. Where do I go from here? Thanks for taking the time and all of that. All right. Well, thank you, most importantly, for writing the email to us tonight. Michael, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Are you well? Are you well, Michael? Hello. Yeah, you hear me?
I'm well. Yes, I can hear you. It's coming and going, but I can hear you fine.
Okay, well, let's see if we can keep it all on track. You heard the email I was reading a little bit earlier on about the woman whose brother she reckons is on the spectrum for some class of autism, but the parents seem to be in denial. What did you think of that?
I think, you know, all over the country we have families and, you know, people don't want to talk about things. And even if that lady explains to her parents what she feels is wrong, I don't think that they're really going to hear her.
Right.
So rather, it'd be great if we could change the culture from a culture of don't talk about it to let's talk about it. If we could just talk about her problems, and if everybody could just genuinely try to listen and understand, I think it would help solve 90% of the problems in the country.
Would you say that there are people in houses around the country with a son or daughter now in their 20s or even older who are undiagnosed with a certain type of illness, if you like, because of what, denial and lack of communication?
I'd say, you know, mental health is a very, very big issue. And all over the country, you know, it's better to talk about problems, whatever they are. And and everybody can be helped in some way, I feel. You know, if to share problems and to talk about things, it's much better than not to talk about them.
And why would you bring this up yourself? Have you had experience, or do you know of anyone, or do you know where communications has helped rather than silence?
Yeah, well, I see almost all, you know, families seem to have some problem with some member of the family falling out over whatever particular reasons. And generally, you know, it's because lack of communication is the problem.
Mm.
You know, people just not actually talking or listening to each other properly. And, you know, I think that there can be an awful lot of pain throughout the country because of it. And a lot of happiness can be gained if people do try to talk.
Yeah. For the reputation of the country is that we're great chatters and very sociable. But obviously we talk an awful lot of, to an extent, a lot of nonsense and blarney, if you like, and small talk. But actually the real stuff gets left behind.
That's right. It's very difficult to talk about those things, and people don't want to go into that at all. It's a very, you know, fearful place for people to talk about any issues or problems, what they really feel. But, you know, if people could talk about their problems, there'd be a lot less problems.
There was a time, I don't know if it's still around, I'd be shocked if it was, but it's certainly in the 50s, 60s, 70s, where people, if there was somebody with mental illness in the family, they either got, you know, left in the back room or put into an institution that was entirely inappropriate for them.
That's right. And not helped at all.
Just going, oh, they've got a thing and let them off. I mean, go on.
But actually, the person who had the problem is the rest of the family that needed the advice and the help, how to deal with the issue and to help. Everybody needs a bit of help, I think, actually. You know, why would you put that person away, or why would you conceal them from everything else? That wouldn't be right to think that way. You know, so we all need a little bit of steerage on how to act or behave when we're facing with a problem.
I wonder, though, in the case of the person we emailed as well, is it the situation whereby the parents are unwilling to confront the thought of their son being somebody who may need further help, who may be mentally ill.
Yeah, well, that's the big problem. People don't want to talk about issues at all because it might open up other things. And actually, you know, it goes into every family, that everybody should get to talk about more about whatever the problems are. And to listen to it's like the whistleblower. Whoever wants to be the whistleblower, we should listen to that person and try to understand what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Because people don't want to understand or listen a lot of the time. But it's always better to listen, and we can make our minds up afterwards.
Why don't people want to understand or listen?
Yeah.
Why don't they, I wonder?
Fear. Fear seems to be it. Yeah. Everybody's afraid.
There's a floodgate factor, isn't there, that if you confront something like that, and as you say, rightly say, the fear is that then you're into it. God, this is for the rest of our lives. We're going to have to deal with this.
Yeah. Okay. Too big of a fear. Yeah. But
Michael,
hopefully, we'll keep on talk.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Keep talking.
Keep on talking. Look, I have a great old day, Michael. Good
morning.
To talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Aoife, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
How are you today?
Not too bad at all.
Well, what piques your interest?
I heard your email there that you read out from that lady about her brother, and I just have some experience in the area, so I thought I might be able to offer a bit of advice.
Please do. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I work with adults with intellectual disabilities. I'm doing a master's in intellectual disability studies at the moment, so I... unfortunately, I've seen, and my mum is an intellectual disability nurse, so I've seen a lot of people as they get that little bit older, and the parents aren't in the picture anymore, Ryan, and then it's the kid that ultimately, this young man, obviously, in this instance, that really needs, you know, he needs the help. It's nobody else. Like, you know, if this was somebody without an intellectual disability that we were talking about, we wouldn't even be considering, like, you know, saying, well, what's he going to do with his life? We have to take everybody else out of the equation, and that chap needs to be allowed to, you know, live his life unimpeded by relatives and by other people. So
right, so you know, in some regards, the parents could be creating an awful problem for the brothers and sisters of the young man in question by virtue of their inaction.
Yes, absolutely.
Right,
they're kind of impeding him from having any kind of independent life. It's kind of like treating him like an infant, and he's not an infant. I'm sure he's a very capable young man.
So,
his brothers and sisters that are left to mind him when the parents aren't there anymore, you know.
So by their lack of action on the whole subject, they're keeping him at a certain level, and also leaving an emotional bombshell for the rest of the family when the parents are no longer an ability to look after him. So in other words, you always hear about early intervention. They need to get in here fast, sort this out.
Oh, absolutely. It needs to be done now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, literally, they need to sit down, as you said earlier, around the kitchen table today. And they need to get whoever they need to get involved. I said contact the National Disability Authority and get some advice on the matter. There's lots of different people that you can contact. Just get onto Google, basically, and have a look.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of support groups out there that will be more than happy to offer them advice on the issue.
And within the family's structure, we got an email from a girl who's the sister of the guy. Okay, so presuming rightly or wrongly, they might have another brother or sister. Within the family then, when the parents go and somebody needs to be looked after a little bit or a lot, depending, there's always one sibling who's kind of left with it, seems. If you're lucky, you'll all share it. But very often, one person is kind of like, the other's going, well, I've got kids and I can't, and I'm looking after somebody else and I've got my own problems. And then one end, you know what I'm talking about. You must see that a lot.
I do, absolutely, yeah. And it's a very, very tough one. And if the chap himself hasn't been given the ability to kind of live an independent life in that regard, he's going to be dependent on one of those brothers or sisters for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's... I mean, tell me a little bit about it, if you could, Aoife, what we're hearing from this business of rocking backwards and forwards a bit, ranting about the films he saw the night before, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time, day in, day out. I mean, does this seem like something you'd have seen before, or is it exaggerated, or what do you think?
They're kind of compulsive behaviours that would be typical of somebody on the autistic spectrum somewhere. Mm. But I mean, I don't have a medical qualification, sure. I couldn't. But I would say he definitely needs an assessment. By unfortunately, the waiting lists are ridiculously long.
Well, there's another problem.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Unless you have the money to pay for healthcare in this country, you're at nothing. I've seen the other side of it, where it's the brothers and sisters who are left to care for someone, and they might have kids themselves, but it's left to them, and it's a tough, tough job, as I'm sure his parents know right now.
Yeah, the text says, I know of a woman who had two mentally ill sons, and to protect them from the world, she raised them in her house, and they were never let out, and now they are in full-time care.
Yeah.
Of course they are. It was inevitable.
Yeah, of course. If you've no contact with the outside world and with people, I mean, anyone who has a level of functioning, and this chap obviously is well capable of, he doesn't have any problems with going outside, or, you know, some people would have a fear of interacting with the community he needs to be just slowly but surely socialised into the world, and they'll assess his capabilities as and when he's assessed, hopefully sooner rather than later. But it can be done, and it should be done, really, for the chap himself.
Yeah, it's true. And people say, the text says, sometimes people feel afraid to say anything as when going for help, because almost everything is a fight to get assistance. Ask any parent with a child with special needs, they need to fight for everything, like SNA and so on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some people are just so, like, the word label itself, and being labelled as something, can cause terrible fright. But unfortunately, to get funding in this country, you need a label as such. Mm-hmm. It's very sad, but it's the truth when it comes to, you know, getting the supports that you need.
Aoife, thank you for that.
Thanks very much.
Good to talk to you.
Good luck to that lady and her family.
Yeah, that's what I need to say. So take care. Bye-bye. Say hello to Katrina, who's on the line. Now, good morning to you, Katrina.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Are you well today?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How old is Leah?
Leah is 3.5.
And is she happy?
She's very happy.
Tell me about her.
Yeah, when Leah was born, they kind of knew straight away that Leah not was autistic, but she had a chromosome disorder as well.
What does that mean?
We didn't realise. It's genetics. Her dad is a carrier of a certain chromosome.
Yeah.
And she got, we'll say, a depletion of one and a duplication of another. So she was born quite, stocky, if you know what I mean, with short limbs.
Okay.
So how that was going to affect her, we didn't know, because we were new parents and we had no idea how it would affect her in life. But the fabulous people in Crumlin and Temple Street, they're amazing, you know. So with that, with the chromosome problem comes a delay, we'll say, in mental health. So Leah's 3.5, but we'll say mentally she's about 2.
Okay, so she's a little behind the average.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Have she got brothers? Have you other kids?
She was my eldest, and I have a 1.5-year-old Lauren. And when I was pregnant with Lauren, I had an amnio done, an amniocentesis done, and everything was fine. She wasn't a carrier of the chromosome, which was great. But Leah's very.
Just before I move on to Leah, what would you have done if the amnio turned the other way?
What could I do, Ryan, to be honest? And, you know, this may sound ridiculous now, what I'm going to say, but I'd have 10 of Leah.
So you wouldn't have considered termination? You wouldn't have considered that option for one moment?
No, I would not. No, I definitely would not.
Well, in that case, why did you bother having the amnio done?
Yeah, I know.
No, but I am curious to know, why would you bother if it didn't matter a damn what came out, if you excuse the expression?
Yeah, it's true, but it was such a shock, we'd say, having Leah, you know, your firstborn. And it was such a shock when they took her off me. And, you know, she was brought down to ICU, and it was just a horrible time for me.
Desperate.
I wanted to bond. I wanted to bond, and I wanted to have the baby and then go back to the hospital bed and have her beside me.
Because you'd seen every movie, you'd read every book, and you'd seen every friend of yours and auntie and uncle going through it all. They get the baby, then it goes A, B, C. Whereas you started going A, Z, O. You're going, what?
Exactly. The little empty crib beside your bed.
I can only imagine.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. But you know what? It turned out okay. She was diagnosed with autism in August, just gone by. And
how was that day for you?
Oh, terrible. My world fell apart. You know, and it did. It did. And I'm not going to say to any parent with an autistic child, oh, for God's sake, it's fine. Listen, there's autism in all of us, and we're all on the autistic spectrum. It's a woeful time. It's a horrible time. My world fell apart. It did. It was a horrible time. But, you know, it's amazing. You go on and the chromosome, and this is how it's going to affect her. And this is, you know, and I often said to my husband, well, you know, at least Alan, she's not autistic. That's the one thing I've always said. Well, you know, at least she's not autistic. At least we can. And then she got this diagnosis in August. But, you know, your mind, you just get into this world that you go, right, okay, what do I have to do? This is what I have to do.
Get real.
Exactly. Yeah. Deal with it. Yeah. And you have to deal with it. And that's why I say to the parents of that young lad, you need to deal with it. Mm. Because if you don't, I'm hoping Leah will be independent. You know, she's already an independent little girl and she does her own thing. Now, she's not speaking. She doesn't talk. She has very few words. But she can communicate with me because she's in this preschool now with three other boys. And she's the only girl and they take care of her. And she has two SNAs and one teacher. And the support she's getting there is marvellous.
The situation of having two SNAs and a teacher, that's a lot for three kids, what?
It is for four, there's four in the class and they're building another prefab, but the principal of the school is a real goer. Like he'll they have a magnificent massive autistic unit.
I see, okay, great.
We'll say for older kids, and this is the first one of its kind, we'll say, where they bring in kids. Now, Leah is the youngest. They call her Baby Leah because she is the youngest. She's only 3 and a half. The guys are there in the class and they're helping her and they're bringing her along. And now, you know, she used to have awful tantrums because she couldn't communicate with me. It was pure frustration, pure and utter frustration. And she could not communicate with me. But now, you know, she'll bring my hand and she'll show me the press or she'll show me the fridge of what she wants. You know, and that to me is communication.
And that's when you're 71.
Yeah.
What?
I'm 87 now, yeah.
Yeah, think about that for a second and tell me what you think.
Yeah, I'm hoping she'll be independent. I really am. I mean, I was watching a programme, I don't know if you saw it, Living with Autism, on BBC Two.
No, I missed it, unfortunately.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
What they say about early intervention is crucial.
Yeah. Well, this is the conversation today. I mean, if we learned nothing else today, for the purpose of the email that started our programme, is conversation, intervention, confrontation of reality.
Exactly.
Nail those three things on the head. You could be. You're way too late for what's called early intervention. But any later is a problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, look. Let's take that advice on board, Katrina, and we'll pass it on.
Absolutely. And the best of luck to them.
You have a busy car there, do you?
I do. Yeah. She's yapping there.
Oh, I can hear that.
She's not yapping. She's yapping there in the background.
Who's that? That's Lauren in the background, obviously, is it?
That's Leah.
That's Leah yapping. Leah. Oh, great. Even better.
Yeah. Leah is chatting away to herself and singing Twinkle Twinkle or humming it. Mad into music.
Again.
About music.
Okay. Well, look, you have a good day and give Leah a hug from us, from me anyway.
Oh, of course I will.
Okay.
Thank you so
Lovely
much
talking
Ryan,
to you.
For taking my call. Thank you.
Thank you so much.